Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Coming up, we will have community garden information that's just around the corner. Good morning, Greg. I just listened to a comment you read out yesterday, read older people retiring to watch the grandkids. This is something I feel very strongly about and was delighted that your thoughts on the matter align with mine. Now, it was a passing remark. It was a lady, or gentleman, I'm not quite sure which, I can't remember. I think it was a lady, actually, who messaged in to say that grandparents should be allowed to retire early so they can care for their grandchildren. And I was like, seriously, that's the last thing I'll want to be doing. I love kids. I love my own kids. I don't want to be a de facto raising them again, if that makes sense. But you know where I'm coming from. But anyway, I'll probably end up doing it. I'm talking out my hat. But anyway, this is something I feel very strongly about and was delighted that your thoughts on the matter align with mine. Why do the younger generation think that this should happen? Do they think that their parents should firstly rear them and then rear their offspring? So in effect, you rear kids from the day you have your own until the day you die. This is especially the case with young single parents who think it's perfectly okay to dump their children, as they say, on granny or granda while they continue to live like young teenagers posing in nightclubs with their Prosecco while mummy and daddy partner are sitting at home watching their kids. They couldn't care less if they break up their parents' relationships, as it could be a case that their mum or dad might be cohabiting and no interest in babysitting at all. Young ones today, this caller says, are so selfish. It's unbelievable. My mother's take on this matter was, I've reared my own and I'm not rearing anyone else's, and she stuck to it. I'd be delighted if you would give this a good airing to see if you and I are the only ones who think like we do. Now, I don't think exactly how you do. I understand what you're saying, and I think I don't think young people are dumping their kids on the granny and grand. Maybe they are. I don't know. But listen, on the basics, I think sometimes there are grandparents who love that's what they love to do. They would have it no other way. And often I find too, if you've noticed, have you ever noticed how your mum and dad treats your children different to how they treated you? There's something that comes with age or what have you, where they calm down a little bit, if you know what I mean. It's really quite interesting to watch that, and I've seen it many, many times over, whereby the parent, grandparent, that they are to your child is very different to the sort of relationship you have with them. But as I say, that probably comes with age and less pressures and all that type of stuff. But some people love to be that grandparent. Drop them over whenever you like, and that's fine. Others, the child's dropped over, and they love their grandchild, and they would do anything for their own child, but it's starting to interfere with how they potentially can live the last days of their life. Now, hopefully it's 10, 15, 20, 30 years, right? But still, it sets in motion a train that can very much have a dramatic difference on your life. You know, next thing you know, you feel guilty of heading away to Portugal for a week because, Mum, are you heading away? Well, what am I going to do? Because I've no one to look. You know what I mean? So if you want to have more of a conversation on that, please do. I think whatever people choose to do, that's fine. And I'm very happy for anyone, whatever they choose to do, I would never judge them. I'm kind of talking about the situations whereby people, this feels a level of obligation, right? 086 60 25,000. If you want to get in on that conversation, come on, quickly. 91 25,000 is the phone number. On the issue of dumps, what about the old dump in Bunkrana where there's a load of houses built on top of it? Wowzers, okay. Bunkrana was on that list, I think. Another oil spill, by the way. Manor roundabout, extremely greasy. It may be an oil spill, so mind yourselves. Back to dumps, though. I can't understand why Clough Finn is low risk and it's sitting on the edge of the River Finn. The initial assessment is not actually necessarily an official one. I think really what you do is you look for a classification. The council looks for a classification from the EPA. They might well say that Clough Finn is high risk and mitigation is needed. But until such time as there is this certificate of recognition, you don't get that, right? So you could be right still. I was just reading what the initial assessments was. The dump beside me, Ardmacool, was a playground for many kids in Ardmacool, Snorlaw. So playing in the dump, it was just I have some sort of a romantic notion of going to the dump. I think it's just because it's a memory of being with my dad or all the birds. So I don't know. Do you know Sunday? Let's go. Yeah, I don't know. I think I don't think I have any romantic view of going to the dump. I think it's just caught up in memories of being with family who are no longer here. On the issue of Ukraine, 100 million for Ukraine, yet our health system is falling apart and many citizens are homeless or living in defective block homes, says a listener. I'd love to think that if that money didn't go to Ukraine, it would make a difference to your life. I'm not sure it would. RTE money. Correct, I have the exact same view of RTE and Virgin Media. Repeats of UTV, which we already seen, and I'm five times better quality picture. I remember having a conversation with, was it Pat Rabbit at the time, and he was defending the licence fee, and I opened up the day's schedule for RTE, and it was literally just, I think there was one or two local programmes. The rest was repeats or what you can watch on on ITV or other channels. And you just wonder, where's the quarter of a billion euro going every year? Some of it's on wages, but it's actually not the presenters that are the highest paid now. It's Backhurst and others that are the top earners now. They have trimmed the wages somewhat. I read that. The whole flags thing just shows how much the EDL-UVF sort of influence or are influencing this stuff. That's their being to use flags as imitation. Complete joke that our far right are so eager to be under the English boot again. Though check some Irish Patriot accounts about on Twitter and you'll see they're mostly just foreign agents stirring the pot. It is quite interesting because X stroke Twitter now tells you where the accounts are based, and some of the interactions I had, I checked where they're from, and they're actually from the United States or Europe, which I thought was quite interesting to have such an interesting in Irish politics. Flags are lovely when they're flown correctly, when they're flown with respect. If you go into the north, the flags are erected in such a way, for the most part, actually, whether you like them or not, or whether you find them offensive or not, or whether they're, but they are flown, they look well and respectful to the flag itself, whether you agree with the notion of why they're doing it or not, or you feel intimidation. Morning, Greg. Back to RTE. In my opinion, RTE are overly funded as it is. Granted, they do the news, etc., but they produce very little original fiction of any quality, and their coverage is so Dublin bite-based. It's crazy. The BBC did something that was really quite significant. They decentralised from London. So they have offices now, active offices that produce programming in northern England, right? Because the north of England was us, and still is to some extent, right? But the north of England, so far from London, it got very little coverage. Everything was secondary. Funding was secondary. So the BBC did decide to decamp out into these areas. There is a Dublin bubble, right? I know there's a Dublin bubble because sometimes I interact with these people and it's completely evident where the majority of people that work in media live, the majority of journalists live, the majority of politicians live there most of the week, even politicians from our part of the world. And people get into this bubble. They're all going to the same quiz nights and playing five-a-side football teams and drinking the same pubs. And they think we're separate. Like, I've had journalists from down the country sort of go, oh, up there, or you lot, or oh, Donegal. Like, the attitude, not everyone's attitude, but they only land here when there's a tragedy. And I'll be honest with you, I've been around some of these people when there was a tragedy. And it was just, it was just like, oh, God, how long's the drive back? My God, hopefully we get this info soon. And some of the most horrific scenarios. And I was like, I don't like this at all. Anyway, sorry, I'll read your full message. Morning, Greg. In my opinion, RTE are overly funded as it is. Granted, they do the news, but they produce very little original fiction of any quality and their coverage is so Dublin-based, it's crazy. The show Nationwide rarely leaves Dublin, Wicklow, Kildare, but more irritating to me is if you go to their RTE news channel on a weekend, all they have on is repeats of Nationwide or Primetime. That is not a news channel like Sky News, BBC News. Can they not get anyone to work at weekends? The work ethos is very public sector in terms of effort, believes that listener. Those are on housing from yesterday, which I will get back to. Cigarette smuggling. If we're travelling from an EU country, we should be able to bring in as many as we like as we are in all in the EU area, but we have all different VAT and tax regimes. So I know what you're saying, but the EU pact doesn't extend to uniformed... Listen, why do you think booze and cigs are so cheap in Spain? Because they have lower VAT rates. That's why that's one of the factors as to why they're so cheap. Great show as usual. Good topic. EU to EU only suits on certain things. Yes, indeed. So if I bring back 20 loaves of bread from Spain, am I going to pay customs on that? Well, you don't smoke bread, but I take your point. Why tobacco and not bread? You pay the VAT in the EU country. It was the same with VRT. Yeah, these are health-imposed taxes, but I'm not defending it. If I go on holiday twice a year, can you bring a year's worth of 6 months' worth? It's every time you travel, I think. It's literally per journey. So I imagine you could travel back and forwards till you were blue in the face if you wanted to. So they're not annual limits. They're limits per travel, per journey. But the idea being at that point, right, is that, you know, if you were smuggling and bringing in the legal amounts, you wouldn't even justify doing it every single day. Do you get where I'm coming from? Wishing Stephen Worski from Solomon's Court a very happy birthday today. Love from your mum, Evelyn, sister Caroline, brothers-in-law, Kieran. Right, I want to mention the car. Sorry, I'm moving away from the mic for a second. Because I'm giving away €1,000 on Friday. I'm not giving away anything. The station is. It's just going to be on this program. So it's part of Highland Radio's big Christmas car draw. The Trombola's going to be making an appearance soon because we're going to have our first winner on Friday of €1,000. So the car's worth over 35 grand, which is great, right? But we've since added €10,000 into it. So there's going to be 10 draws of €1,000 starting on Friday, then all next week, and then into the following week, right? So there's 11 draws in total. So I would advise that if you are going to enter, that you enter now, and that means that you can just sit back and you're in all the draws, right? You don't have to worry about it. You don't feel like you've missed out on anything. So the car, we are working with our friends at Highland Motors, and the car's a beautiful Renault Symbios. It's worth over 35k. It's fully specced out, and it's parked opposite where I am today outside the garage over there. It's a beautiful car. And then starting on Monday, on Monday and running until the 19th, all you have to do is buy a ticket. This is the €1,000 giveaway, so it's not actually starting Friday, sorry. We're giving away something else on Friday. On Monday on this show, we're giving away €1,000. And then €1,000 every day for 10 working days. So get your tickets now. They're 15 quid each, or you can get 5 for 50. So if you want to group buy them and dish them out or keep them for yourself or whatever. Of course, from my perspective and the station's perspective, only enter if you can afford to do so and have a bit of fun with your cash. So it's 15 for one ticket, 5 for 50. You're in a draw then for 11 draws effectively, but you need to get them this week to be in all of the draws which start next Monday. So you can go on our website, highlandradio.com, get your tickets there. It's very simple. It's very safe and secure. But if you prefer, give us a ring and we'll work it through. We'll process it for you and then email out your tickets. You don't have to answer the call, by the way. If your number's drawn, you've won, all right? So just in case you're on night shifts or something or working in a shop behind a counter and you can't have your phone, you don't have to answer your phone. If your ticket comes out, you've won. If you want us to help you process it, 07491 25000. We can do that for you right now, and that means that you're in all 11 draws. 07491 25000. Some people just deal in cash. The gentleman in here the other day, and he wanted to pay in cash, and he didn't have an email address because he doesn't blummin' do email. So the sheet was printed and given to him as well. Some people are like that, and we accommodate all. You're all equally important to us, dependent on how you live your lives. But if you want to be in all 11 draws, get in it today. 07491 25000. We'll help process that for you, or give us a visit on our website, HighlandRadio.com. Good morning again. It is Tuesday, the 2nd of December, 25 minutes past 10. Time for Community Garda information. And in studio with me this week is Garda Sean Swinney from the Buncrana Garda Station. Sean, thanks for calling down to us.
It's good to be here, Greg.
It's good to have you with us. Right, we'll get straight into the appeals, starting off with instances in the Battle Buffet area.
Yes, occurred in the Beaches, Battle Buffet on Wednesday, the 26th of November, at approximately 11:30 p.m. Rep Peugeot believed the event was state. At that time, two men got out and caused damage to the door of an apartment in the state. They also smashed the window. They then stole a black Audi with partial registration 161DL58 from the neighbouring property, and both vehicles exited the state. short 10 metre, approximately 11:45 p.m. So it'd be 15 minutes. Report received, the Red Puget was on fire at Drennan, Balbuffet, and the fire service attended the scene. So our appeal to witnesses to these incidents to get in touch. We're particularly interested in hearing from anybody who may be in the area of the beaches or Drennan or the surrounding areas with dashcam footage between 11:15 p.m. and midnight on the date. Anybody who's any information on the current location of the stolen car, please contact Ballyshannon on 07198 58530 or the confidential line 1800 666 111.
And people, for whatever reason, whether right or wrong, might be reluctant to sort of maybe get involved, in inverted commas. That's where the confidential line comes into play, because you leave a recorded message and you don't have to leave any of your details. That applies not just to this appeal, but to all appeals.
That's exactly
or right. Any information you might have, even on an incident that doesn't feature on this item. Right, now we heard on the news about a road traffic collision in Letterkenny. It's the subject of an appeal now.
Yes, yeah, so our appeal is for witnesses or dashcam footage, a connection road traffic collision has occurred at the L1114. This is at Old Town, Letterkenny. It's happened on Monday, the 1st December at approximately 4:50 p.m. Collision involved a car and a pedestrian. Pedestrian was taken to hospital for non-life-threatening injuries and the driver was uninjured. So our appeal is witnesses the collision of the area with dashcam footage to contact Letterkenny 9167 100.
All right, so next road traffic collision appeal relates to Falkara.
Yes, occurred in Main Street, Falkara on Saturday the 29th November at approximately 9 p.m. Car involved was travelling from Gartahork towards Dunfanaghy. The collision occurred. Pedestrians suffered injuries, none of them believed to be serious. So we're not seeking anyone connection to the incident. We're just looking for witnesses at the incident. If you saw anything, contact Ballyshannon 071 985 8530, or if you've dashcam footage from around that time.
Yeah, now another road traffic collision, this time in Letterkenny again.
Yeah, this was on Sunday the 30th November, shortly before 7:30 p.m. Between two vehicles, a white Audi and a silver Toyota Vitz, at the roundabout on the Kilmacrennan Road in Letterkenny. The driver of the Toyota did not remain at the scene, so both vehicles were travelling from Letterkenny and both were exiting the roundabout to travel towards Kilmacrennan at the time of collision. There's no injuries reported. We're looking for witnesses to collision. Again, dashcam footage around that time. In contact Letterkenny 9167 100.
And is it possible that potentially the driver of the Toyota wasn't aware at the time, and this might make...
It's always
in someone's best interest to come forward themselves, yeah. Because they might have seen damage and they just didn't realise for one reason or another. Now, an appeal in relation to an ongoing road traffic investigation.
Yeah, appealing any motorists with dashcam footage who may have travelled between Ballyrain, Letterkenny and Main Street, Remelton on Monday, the 1st December, between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. If you have the footage, make it available to Gardaí in Milford. This appeal is relates to an ongoing investigation. So Milford's number is 915-3060.
Now, you are appealing now for information in relation to criminal damage in St Johnston.
Yes, yeah, occurred at Church Street, St Johnston, in the early hours of this morning, Tuesday the 2nd December, at approximately 2:40 a.m, a lit newspaper was put through a letterbox in the house. Thankfully, there's only smoke damage caused as a result. So our appeal is anybody in the area between 2:15 a.m. and 3 a.m. this morning who may observe a man or men on foot or any type of suspicious activity, get in touch with us. We're always appealing for dashcam footage, so if you're in that area around that time, you can contact Letterkenny or the confidential line again, 1800 666 111.
Yeah, real serious one. 2:40 a.m. this morning, so a very fresh appeal. A lit newspaper put through the letterbox of a house, and we don't need to emphasise what the potential consequences of that may have been. Right, we will go to Buncrana now, and an assault's being investigated.
Yeah, this occurred at Upper Main Street, Buncrana, in the early hours of Sunday the 19th of October between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. A man sustained injuries after he was allegedly assaulted and was hospitalised for medical treatment. No life-threatening injuries, but from inquiries carried out, they believe there was a number of people who witnessed the incident. So we're asking those people to get in touch with Buncrana. Ring the station 9320540, or anybody who's travelling the area with dashcam footage, a lot of cars going around the area that time of night.
Right, the scammers never rest, and they're coming up with new ways to try and catch us out on a daily basis. You've details of the latest scam that's going about.
Yeah, look, we asked you to pass this information on to elderly, vulnerable family members and neighbours. So what happened, a call was received, and the call was purporting to be from a well-known broadband company. They explained the internet speed is very slow, and as a result, you're going to be compensated. In one of the instances, the caller requested the recipient set up a payment link on the mobile phone to facilitate the refund. They then took control of their phone. So in most cases, they're simply requesting financial or bank card details so the money can be transferred. In all cases, once they have those details, they steal your money.
They can clean your account out straight away, yeah.
So we said, look, never provide your bank details to anybody. Never click on the link they sent to you via text message, email, and definitely don't agree to download any link. They can get remote access to your phone and they'll get total access to your accounts. If anybody received a call looking for personal information, it should be an alarm bell. Verify the source. You can go online and Google the company name and number and call them directly yourself. And again, if it's too good to be true, it usually is.
These people will jump through hoops to try and avoid refunding, so be extra careful. I know you don't pluck these out of the sky. These are put together based off of reports that are received, you know, in the weeks or days in advance of the appeal. So these are live and active scams that are going about now. So effectively, someone calls you up, and I would love to know if people are doing this. Let me know, 086 60 25 000, but obviously pass on the info to the guards primarily. But they're calling up saying your broadband's slow. You probably haven't reset your router in a week, so it probably is. And they're so sorry about this, they're going to actually refund you. And as soon as they get access to your account to put money into it, well, what they're actually doing is getting access to your account to pull money out. Right.
A lot of the time, too, the callers are very good at what they're doing. This is their job. But a lot of people feel embarrassed because they're caught and they don't actually report it, which doesn't help things either.
100%, yeah, exactly. And it is, like, it depends on which bank you're dealing with. But the problem with this scam is you are actually gifting access to a third party, right? So they're in a very illegal way, they're getting it from you, but you are giving them this access, which can make it really quite complicated then in recouping the money when you're dealing with a lending institution. So the best thing is to avoid it at all. Some of them will work with you and can work it out, but it's an absolute blooming hassle. Right now, there is a home security event coming up in Rathmullen. What's this all about?
Yes, the Home Security Cybercrime Awareness Community Alert. This is taking place at the SVP Centre in Rathmullen on Monday, the 8th of December at 7:30 p.m. The number of guest speakers, the event including Sergeant Fergus McGrory, he's a Divisional Crime Prevention Officer, and Katrina Sinnott of Winchup na Tíre. So refreshments will be served and everyone's welcome to attend.
Brilliant stuff. And we are heading into the Christmas period and not attributing any blame to anyone at all. I'm speaking generally here now. I think it's clear that we need to be conscious that we're all sharing the same space on the roads, be it pedestrians, motorcyclists, scooter riders, drivers, and just generally speaking, you know, to be conscious of that, because they're horrible, wet, murky old days that we're seeing now at the moment. But also, too, we don't want to be doing anything that is illegal, obviously, but impedes our attention and what have you. So there is a general Christmas Garda road safety appeal that you're going to give us, yeah?
Yeah, well, look, as you said, this appeals to anybody who's using the roads, footpaths, anywhere out. To just stay safe and, look, don't drive when you're under an influence. So over the Christmas period, there's going to be an increased presence on the roads. So we conducted dedicated road traffic enforcement, which began at 7 a.m. on Monday the 1st December, and it continues until 7 a.m. on Monday the 5th of January. So with increased presence, I said, look for detection for drinking drug drivers. Over the course of the last week alone, Donegal, so that's Tuesday to the day, there were 8 arrests for drink driving related offences and 5 arrests for drug driving related. So that's a lot, really, if you look at it. So we urge all drinkers, again, don't drink and drive. Wear your seatbelt. Don't be distracted while you're using or holding your mobile phone. The only way you can solve this is by working together.
Yeah, and I think too, if we know to what time that enforcement sort of kicked off at, a lot of people are caught not necessarily in the act as they would see it. It's the morning after.
Yes.
You know, when there are Christmas parties and what have
around
you.
Around this type of year. So just be aware, if you are out, there are increased checkpoints. Yeah,
and you know, people have some understanding of drinking the system, I would hope. There's a lack of understanding, I think, about how long drugs can stay in someone's system. So you need to be really, really careful about that. Notwithstanding, it's illegal to take drugs, but you know where I'm coming from. The how long it takes to leave your system, do you really know? Right, okay. Can you see me now? Some people might have come across this. Talk to me about this nationwide campaign.
Yeah, this was launched on the 26th of November. It's a nationwide road safety campaign. It's just to draw urgent attention to the visibility in Irish roads, particularly for vulnerable road users such as pedestrians, cyclists, e-scooters and motorcyclists. So on Thursday 27th, a series of posts were shared in social media, and these posts were pinned at the top profiles forming a high visibility strip. So drivers have a vital role to play and are most exposed on the roads. So we're asking people, vehicle lights are fully operational and drive at dip headlights during the day. I would say all the time, but particularly at this time of year with the fading light and poor weather conditions. Keep the windscreen clear, your wipers are working, make sure there's sufficient water in so you have good visibility. So leave extra space for the overtaking pedestrians, cyclists, motorcyclists, especially on rural roads. And again, urge all users, wear high-vis clothing, appropriate lighting on bicycles, motorcycles, use dipped headlights, slow down, give extra space and be extra vigilant during hours of low light.
Yeah, the amount of people not wearing high-vis in the dark, especially, sorry to say it again, especially children waiting for buses, running across roads to buses in the mornings and evenings, it really, really is worrying. And also too, and we all can be a little bit guilty of this, we have to make sure that we can see clearly out the windscreen before we pull off as well, right? Because it's not just ice and stuff, condensation can limit us as well.
You can order high-vis at rsa.ie if you don't have
one. Some in the Garda stations and stuff. It's not accessibility, Sean. It's getting people to wear them. And I get it, right? And I know sometimes it's hard to get into young people. And I've said it on the show before, sometimes it's hard to get them to even wear a coat, let alone a reflective coat. But you know, we have had a number of instances where there's been collisions between motorists and pedestrians, for whatever reason that might be, and not all of them feature on this item. And, you know, we're very vulnerable as on the roads. You know, we need pedestrians, that is, and cyclists. We just need to take extra care. Right, Garda Sean Sweeney, thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Good stuff. Safe journey back to Buncrana Garda Station. That's Garda Sean Sweeney. And we'll be back with Community Garda information for you again after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Okay, James Anthony McGinley is the Donegal Dublin Business Network Business Person of the Year. And he's in studio with me now. Fáilte Aigéan Studio, thank you for joining us. How are you keeping?
Good on my head, Greg. Keeping very well, thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a big surprise. As I said, it was a call out of the blue that, you know, I certainly wasn't expecting at all. So a great surprise and a great bit of publicity, and the goodwill that we've been getting from people is unreal. It's, you know, every person you meet is congratulating. So it's been a nice week.
John McGinley's Coach Travel, was it launched in 68? So it's approaching 40 years, right?
Is nearly that right? 60 years.
60
nearly
years, 60 right. Years, but you've been at the helm for...
I've been at the helm for... So my dad started the business in the late
60s. So talk to me about that. What did he start with?
Started off with a van that he actually used to go around selling fish, and I suppose improvised then at weekend where the van was cleaned out and there was a couple of side stools put
in.
Can
I just have a big round of applause for whoever's cleaning that out before the weekend?
But it was a couple of side suits put in, and then I suppose it was a case of taxiing, and he even talks about going down as far as Knock with older people, and talks about going round corners and the ones on the left landing on top of the ones on the right. And in those days, it was acceptable.
But he got them from A to B.
So I think then after a while, maybe when he realised there was a business there, they finally put a couple of windows in this van and made a proper minibus on it. And as a few more years ago, and proper purpose-built minibuses then.
How long did that take before it sort of started the first work on the first fleet then?
I'd say probably 3 or 4 years. I think it was a big change in the early 70s when the Department of Education closed a lot of primary schools, and there was a lot of amalgamation of schools. So there was a lot of school runs started in the early 70s. So I think that was where a lot of bus operators maybe started to work.
Tenders started coming out.
Tenders
there was work that you could rely on. In other words, you could invest in... You could invest in the vehicles because you were getting a tender for a certain amount of time, and there was a business.
There was a business there, and then the other part then that was a very big part of the business that started around then was the service to Glasgow. And that started kind of by accident as well. There used to be a boat that used to go from Derry, an old cattle boat that went from Derry to Glasgow. And people that emigrated from the northwest, Glasgow was kind of, I suppose, the cheapest and easiest place to go, go as far as Derry, and they were on the boat and they were away. So that was for a long number of years, they would have done taxis to the boat. And he talks about, you know, before emails or telephones, it was outside usually the church on a Sunday that most bookings were received. You'd be kind of standing waiting for people.
Do you have a seat for Derry?
Do you have a seat? Or my son's coming home next week and can you pick him up? So started going to Derry with passengers, as did a lot of bus operators. I mean, at that time there was a huge movement from different parts of the county to that boat, and so that happened for a few years, and then the Derry boat was done away with, and the boat changed from Larne to Cairnryan. And I suppose that gave an opportunity to, because people were then had no way to get to Cairnryan and no way to get from Larne, so a through service started then all the way to Glasgow. And before, I suppose, the time of budget airlines or anything like that, you know, there was hundreds, thousands travelling. And as I said, there was probably about 15 coach operators in the county doing that service, all from their own parts of the county. And even in my youth, you know, when I was at school time, I remember being in Letterkenny in the summertime as they were heading off on a Saturday morning. I could have remembered 15, 16 coaches leaving on a Saturday morning, maybe
much movement of people.
It was. Yeah. And it would have been the same the next day and the next day. And so
what was branding like then? Like, you know, were the buses branded at that point?
No, there was very little branding.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
That time, I suppose, it was very unusual or unheard of to be buying new coaches. Most of the coaches were hand-me-downs from UK operators. So most of those coaches would have stayed in the livery of the UK coach company, maybe that had. So even again in my youth, you know, before I got involved, there was three or four buses there, and every one of them would have been blue, and one was red and one was orange, and, you know, there was a combination. So branding, I suppose, at that time wasn't an issue at all, as long as it had wheels and was able to go from A to B. And again, it was, you know, as sure... And that time it was a big deal to go all the way to Glasgow, you know, before any communications were based, or if you had a breakdown or anything at all. But they dealt with it, and there's some great stories about bringing remains home in the back of the bus and bringing animals home. And
it was the link,
it was the only link at the time.
When you came into the company, you know, when you rode into it, I'd say you were probably taking buses for scotches at 10 around the yard, were you? we'll say nothing, but I'd say you were, right? So you're born into it. It's in you, right? When you came into the company then, what position did you have, and where was it at in terms of the company that we know now?
Well, it was definitely in its infancy. Yeah. There was a couple of minibuses and a couple of coaches, and it was mostly the school runs and a wee bit of private hire here and there. But it was, you know, there was no, I suppose, steady work. There was no work that you could depend on every day of the week that was there. And I suppose when I became involved, that was an important thing. You know, if you were going to make a career of it and move the company forward, it was important that there was some kind of forward. So that was kind of the time that the service to Dublin started. And that was, I suppose, at the time, steady work, as they call it. But it was a difficult time. You know, money was hard to get from banks to buy good buses, and it definitely was a difficult period. And again, it wasn't like today. You didn't have the movement of people to airports or anything like that. It was mostly students, and so it was just a Friday and Sunday service initially, bringing students home on a Friday. And again, there was a lot of empty legs, and that you travelled up the road empty on a Friday to bring people home.
Because you have to get people to think that way too.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? To say, all right, okay, I'll hop on a bus and hop back. You know, I know it sounds very obvious now, but, you know, certainly for this part of the world, you're starting to do something that people have to become accustomed to.
Yes, and I suppose, again, there was, you know, we talk all the time of, you know, trains and the lack of them in this county. So there wasn't the connectivity to Donegal was, you know, was very little. Even students that we don't travel to Galway, Fida O'Donnell does that route. But again, until they started, for example, students coming to Donegal would have had to get off in Donegal town and make their own home. And similar in our own case, Letterkenny was the last stop, so to travel on to West Donegal. So it was a case of bringing, I suppose, a connection to that part of the county.
So, I mean, obviously then things, you know, I mean, obviously the business starts to establish itself, but you have to, you don't want to become too big too fast either. You know, there's a huge outlay in the machinery that every time you're using it, it's depreciating, and you have to add all that stuff into it, right? So talk to me through how the business grew from really the first scheduled Dublin run.
So I suppose that it was just a Friday and Sunday run initially for a number of years until the early 90s. And then the daily service was added, and that, of course, was you know, a big event at the time. And again, you know, there's a people sometimes underestimate the huge costs. I mean, even a fuel alone, you're looking at €300-400 for a return trip. So there was a huge cost to operate it. But passenger numbers came, and I suppose the people of West Donegal put their fate behind us. And then as time moved on, we also added in then a coach service from Inishowen and Derry to Dublin as well, and that kind of suited into the service. So over the years, the service got busier and busier, and extra services were added on. And then I suppose I was still, you know, young at the time myself, and I had still maybe itchy feet that I wanted still to do more. And it was at that point then that we got involved in tourism and then coach holidays started.
You know what that means, though? Bigger and better buses.
Bigger and better buses. Well, at that stage, I suppose we bought our first new coach in 1994. But again, I suppose I would have been seeing the English companies coming across with their flashy new coaches, and you know, was thinking that that was the way forward. So, we started the first coach tour in 1997. And again, that was most of our coach tours are actually, we sell them all over the country, and we probably bring more groups into Donegal than we do to any part of the county, or the country rather. So that built up from doing 5 tours the first year to 10 to 20, and has built up. So in any given year now, we'll do about between 350 and 400 coach tours per annum. So from St. Patrick's Day till I suppose the last
week. And it's an unsung hero, really, of the economy, isn't it? You know, because you're transporting people around that are spending money.
We are
bringing them into areas.
Yeah, bringing them in. As I said, there's weeks that we could have 4 or 5 groups in Donegal, a couple of groups in the Mount Errigal and the Clanree and Donegal Town and Bundoran.
So
and
do you still do school runs as well?
We still
so
do.
So what's the biggest portion of the business then? Is it the tours? Is it the scheduled? Is it the school bus stuff?
Or? Yeah, so we're very lucky in that we have a good breakdown. Our business isn't kind of dependent too much on one sector. We still do a small number of school runs. Still do a bit of private hire. We work for a few of the local schools, the Pubbles, Golfalcara, and some of those. And then the scheduled service obviously is very much a bread and butter, because it's all year round, even in the midst of the winter when coach tours are finished up. People are still travelling and people are still moving. So that is a good part. But I suppose it's an even split between the coach tours. And then we started then kind of a little niche to the business, in that we got involved in the cruise industry completely by accident, when some of the people that were travelling in the coach tours were kind of complaining that there was no cruise company leaving directly from Ireland. So in 2011, there's a big long story, but I won't go into it today. But in 2011, we managed to charter a cruise ship from Fred Olsen Cruise Lines. And we operated a cruise out of Dublin, which was, we brought our own entertainment, our own skybox, our own, wow. So we had our TV, brought the priest, we brought the minister, we brought bands, we sold that out. And 2 years later, we'd done it again. And 2 years later, we'd done it again. And that side of the business grew immensely. And unfortunately, just before COVID, it nearly was becoming a bigger part. We were in 2000, had COVID not hit, we would have carried over 5,000 people on cruise.
And are you back up post-COVID on that? Yeah.
So we are, unfortunately, the company that we were working with, they went out of business over COVID. Okay. They bought two new ships in January.
Great timing, yeah.
So they went out of business, but we managed, there was a phoenix in the ashes. Some of the directors involved in that did. So we're dealing with a new company now called Ambassador Cruise Line. And again, so we're kind of, our niche and big selling point is that it's a no-fly cruise. There's the cruise,
which is actually really quite important to some people. And of course, people would have seen the great social media coverage of the huge investment. Was it last year? 10 new coaches.
Yeah, that's right. So again, I'm a great believer, and I suppose
you're a great spender, James Anthony.
Well, I suppose I'm a great believer in continuity and having even
investment
in the
world, improving the customer experience,
and
comfort.
as well as that, having everything the same, maybe called a wee bit of OCD, but it's great in the workshop. For example, we have 10 exactly identical models. The mechanics get to know them. We have the parts on the shelf for them. It's not a mishmash of different, and customers know that if they travel on our coach today and if they travel on it next week, that it's going to be the same kind of a coach with the same livery and the same design. So last year was our largest order ever. We bought 10 new Volvo coaches at a cost of $4 million. And that was a brilliant experience as well. And again, the people of the county, it was unbelievable, the goodwill and the...
Talk to me about that goodwill, because we don't have very much longer. But when a company is of scale, the scale that you talk of, to have that goodwill or that sense of a local service, right, that doesn't happen by accident. That happens because it's part of what service is delivered and the ethos of a company, okay? So you're not seen as this big corporation that doesn't get their customers, but you are a big, big business, right? How does a business keep its feet on the ground to retain that support?
I think it's definitely, being on their level. I mean, our staff, first of all, the team that we have are unbelievable. I mean, our drivers are, I consider my drivers, my office staff, I consider them all as my friends rather than my employees. And I think that ethos comes out to them. They all have a sense of responsibility. They all... And, people will always talk, and they're the most important asset. We talk about the 10 new coaches, but, the staff are 10 times more important than that. So I think it's providing, but the people of the county, as I said, it's unbelievable, the great will, and whenever we put up a Facebook post or something, you'll start getting the messages going up, that we'd be lost without you, or, somebody had said something nice the last time. They said... McGinley coaches to Donegal is the same as Guinness to Ireland, and that lifts my heart so much to see that. But no, it's I think in Donegal we probably are a little bit clannish, and we'll see that at referendum time and at any time that we book the trend. So they definitely are very much behind them, and I want to thank them for all that support, because we wouldn't be there without them.
Congratulations to you personally, James Anthony McGinley, Dublin Business Network Person of the Year, but it's a whole team, and it's a congratulations to your company as well. And James Anthony will receive his reward at the DDBN Christmas Gala Dinner on Thursday, December 11th at the Ivy Gardens Hotel, Harcourt Street, Dublin 2. Hopefully you've got your tuxedo ironed.
We have, and I suppose to put out a shout for them, we are in the night doing a charity raffle for Pieta House. And as I said, if anybody is looking to sponsor any prizes, if they get in touch with the Dublin Donegal Business Network, I'm sure they'll be glad to take them. I suppose to thank the network as well for giving me this nomination and this prize.
Congratulations. A worthy winner. James Anthony McGinley, thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.